I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. That's right. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to you. Good morning, lurking conservatives. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron. How
que
you doing?
Pasa, amigo?
No, I'm a little depressed this morning. Someone I knew very well passed away yesterday.
Someone I knew not that well passed away.
Yeah.
This is a rough morning already.
Well,
What happened, man? Do you want to talk about it?
Well, I mean, he died from a stroke. His name was Bill Christie. We used to call him John Wayne. Mm-hmm. Because he really was, like, the embodiment of a John Wayne character. No-nonsense big guy who I had a real big problem with for the first 2 years I knew him, and then we became close.
Is this a professional relationship or just a buddy of yours?
No, it's a buddy. It was a guy. He used to be a security guard at NYU I was at NYU.
Wow. Goes back, huh?
It goes back a long way, and then it turns out we had a mutual interest in drum and bugle corps, ironically enough, and I got to know him because I marched in the corps that he worked with.
Well, sorry you lost your friend, buddy.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, a guy I didn't know that well, a comic named Freddie Soto, passed away on Sunday night. A young guy, don't know what happened. I just heard about it last night from my wife. So let's try and distract ourselves from our grief and move into the news. What do you say? Given that, let me just say one thing to you, Riley. Given that Karl Rove is basically guilty of treason, all right, this guy's like he's worse than a terrorist. You know, revealing the identity of undercover CIA operatives, putting, you know, the national security at stake. Karl Rove is worse than a terrorist. He's guilty of perjury, at least, and I think that can be proven, all right? You think that the White House can make at least some sort of comment, given the fact that it's been confirmed that Rove was Time reporter Matthew Cooper's source for information that compromised the cover of Valerie Plame, the CIA operative, Joe Wilson's wife is what he called her. But that's semantics. It's still identifying her, I think. But apparently that's not the case. Scott McClellan decided that he wasn't gonna give any information. A lot of excuses, Scott McClellan.
Well, see, what we have here, Mark, is a classic Bush strategy. And I think, when we talked to Jim Moore yesterday, who obviously is an expert on Karl Rove, he kind of broke down for us where this kind of thing comes from.
Sure.
They are now having to deal with the fact that statements made both by Scott McClellan and George W. Bush are exposed as out-and-out lies.
Right? Lies, completely contradictory. We're going to go through the whole evolution of these statements in just a couple minutes. We're going to listen to McClellan. We're going to listen to Bush. We're going to parse it out. These guys are categorical. Is that the word? They are liars. And Karl Rove is guilty of treason. I think he's guilty on paper. Certainly he is. I think that he could be sentenced to perjury if it's done properly, but I think it's an anti-American act he took and it compromised national security. We'll go through the evolution of White House responses in just a couple of minutes, Riley.
Absolutely. I mean, I kind of feel that this is almost pathological on the part of this administration. It's something that they do so frequently, and I hate to say this, but they do it so well that they believe they can get away with lying to people like this. And just say, well, you know, we didn't mean this, we said this. We didn't mean this, we said this. And they think they're going to be able, not just Rove, but the entire administration thinks they can weasel out of this.
Not this time, though. McClellan, he was put to the task by reporters. It's about time some of these press guys are stepping up. But there was no tolerance for McClellan's crap this time. They were just sort of like, dude, where are you? You know what it was? Is the crack of the non-reality that these guys have created and live in. It just cracked with McClellan because you have all this stuff on tape of him saying certain things and Bush saying certain things, and he's sitting up there going, I can't comment about that. It's like, dude, it's broken. We can see into the dark, evil world that you guys, the illusion is breaking apart, my friends. It's great news, and we're going to hear it. We're going to hear it all in just a couple minutes. Let's do a couple of other stories here. In a pretty bold and weird, I don't know how weird it was, but some prisoners, some pretty, you know, high risk dudes, the Bagram detention facility in Afghanistan is known primarily for prison torture, abuse, and the murder of two inmates by U.S. servicemen. Seven U.S. servicemen were charged in relation to the deaths in 2002. Now it's known for something else. Four, quote unquote, dangerous enemy combatants escaped from the detention facility and left the base altogether, apparently. The U.S. military said the men who escaped were militants from Syria, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and Libya. A big manhunt, including a helicopter air support. It was launched at a Bagram yesterday. That's north of Kabul. They say that this is what killed me in the article. Is the sources say that they were all Arabs. They have short hair, long beards, and prison clothes. If they lose the prison clothes, Riley, I think they just narrow the search down to every man in Afghanistan.
Well, you know, Mark, we've been noticing now for the last couple, 3 months, that Afghanistan is creeping back into the news with increased frequency. We hear about the shooting down of helicopters. We hear about these insurgent actions. We hear again that Hamid Karzai doesn't even control the southern part of the country that he's supposed to run.
My friend, I saw a documentary the other night, Oil. It's called Oil. It's we're going to have the guy on next week, I think, who did the documentary. I'm not even sure if tomorrow he's going to be on.
Oh, okay.
Well, hold on. What's the title of the Oil Factor? All right, it's basically a characterization documentary proving that the entire conflict over there in Iraq and Afghanistan is about consolidating and protecting the last of the world's oil resources. Now, they have footage of the Taliban in there, man, that just blew my mind. Right after the Taliban took over, they had the stadium footage of them hanging people, shooting women, just the chaos and weird frenetic energy that was going on once these guys took power. It was primitive and bizarre. And the thought that these guys are back and the thought that that these warlords are still ruling and Karzai is just sitting there in Kabul saying, this is what I have, I cannot, you know, it's creepy.
And you've mentioned this on several occasions before, Mark, the poppy trade is right back where it was
huge before. Some good news and some bad news also out of Afghanistan. A Navy SEAL that was part of the four-man reconnaissance team that went missing on June 28th. Apparently, this guy had suffered multiple leg wounds. He walked like 2 miles through the mountains. A villager found this soldier, hit him in his village, and according to military accounts, the Taliban came through the village and demanded that the soldier be turned over, and the villagers refused. Now, given the Taliban, what I saw them in this movie, this seems like a good story. You know, I don't know if it's been invented for the press, because it seems to me that the Taliban, not unlike the Viet Cong, would have just shot the villagers and taken the guy. But maybe because of inter-conflicts or respects for other warlords, that didn't happen. But I don't know about the credibility of that particular story, but I do know the guy is safe, which is good. The other Navy SEAL that the Taliban had claimed to have beheaded was not beheaded, it turns out. He was not even held by the Taliban, but he is dead, sadly.
Yeah, and there are two other SEALs. Danny Dietz from Colorado and Michael Murphy of Long Island, right here in New York, were recovered on the 4th of July. So, I mean, you know, you're looking now again at a situation where the United States, while saying it's in control, is not really in control.
Certainly not in Iraq or Afghanistan. Bernie Ebbers going down, but not hard enough, I don't think. A federal judge gave preliminary approval Monday to a civil suit settlement under which former WorldCom chief Bernie Ebbers will pay a paltry $5 million and forfeit nearly all his property. That doesn't seem enough to me, Riley, for bilking the public out of $11 billion. Am I wrong?
Well, no, I don't think you are. To be real honest with you, Mark, I think that these white-collar criminals, who, by the way, all of whom lived high off the hog while they were robbing people's money.
$11 billion this guy screwed people out of.
Yeah, and I mean, literally, across the board, between Enron and Evers and all Adelphia and all these people, literally, thousands of stockholders, thousands of workers, all got
pensions.
Pensions, the whole nine yards. These people are walking around with nothing. And what is Bernie Ebbers walking around?
Everything. And they're asking for $5 million in all his property. You know, this guy stashed millions and millions of dollars somewhere. But on the good side, prosecutors have asked a different judge than the one that okayed the preliminary on this particular sentence to follow a U.S. probation report that says Ebbers should get life in jail for his crimes under federal sentencing guidelines. Now, that sounds a little more like it, Riley.
Yeah, I remember when I saw that story, I said, wait a minute, this judge really isn't playing much down here, is he? This is, of course, a situation where Ebbers And by the way, this was a record fraud. I mean, this makes even Enron look like amateurs by comparison. I mean, this guy just like, he robbed everybody blind. I'm not saying he was convicted, for God's sake.
$11 billion, my friends. Coming up, we've got Scott McClellan in, you know, just trying to hold the seams together of the non-reality that has been created by the right wing, not successfully. We've also have some news in from London indicating that the explosives used on Friday were of military quality. Where did they come from? 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. Stay here.
Hi, this is former Labor Secretary Robert Reich. Remember me? I helped preside over the greatest economic expansion in our nation's history, creating over 20 million new jobs during Clinton years. I'm sorry to hear that the Bush administration has either outsourced or eliminated your job entirely. But while you're waiting for things to turn around, stay tuned to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Give me back my job again.
In the face of such adversaries, there is only one course of action. We will continue to take the fight to the enemy, and we will fight until this enemy is defeated. America will not retreat in the face of terrorists and murderers.
In direct contradiction to that statement George Bush made yesterday, all 12,000 members of the Air Force that are stationed in Britain have been told not to travel inside inner London because of the risk of further bomb attacks. Needless to say, British MPs were pissed. They were like, dude, you know, the UK was right there, man, right there. Britain was right there for you guys after 9/11, and you guys are, I can't believe that. You can't even, they buckled right in the face of terrorism literally less than 24 hours after the blow monkey puppet ex-fake Christian whatever of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult makes that statement yesterday, Riley.
Well, see, here's the thing, Mark. There are 3.6 million Americans that go to London every year. How many of them do you think are going to mess with London if the U.S. military, people who represent the armed forces of the United States, are being told to stay out? What do you think an ordinary tourist is going to say?
Trips are being canceled all around the country. I just want to, all around America, all around the world, for England, but, you know, for the Americans to do that, for Bush to make that statement and directly contradict himself the next day, there is no other reason why the directive would be given to 12,000 Air Force troops in Britain not to go into London other than they are retreating from terrorism. That's a given.
That's so, plain and simple.
And, you know, we're going to get into McClellan in just a few minutes. I did want to say hello to our good morning to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. As of today, we're on AM 1380, Progressive Talk for Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
Welcome aboard. I also want to say you can go out and rally to reform the Patriot Act. The New York Civil Liberties Union and People for the American Way are holding a rally today at New York Public Library at 5th Avenue and 31st Street. That's starting at noon. Mark and I and the rest of the crew will be broadcasting live this Friday from Restaurant Florent on Gansevoort Street in the Meatpacking District here in New York City. Steve Earle is going to perform live with us. That's something to come down for. Steve's a great guy and obviously a great singer-songwriter. Plus, we'll be giving away free coffee and a bunch of other free stuff. That's Restaurant Florent on Gansevoort.
Gansevoort.
Come on.
Gansevoort.
Gansevoort Street.
Hudson and Greenwich.
You know, I eat on Gansevoort Street, and I can never pronounce the name. Let me just tell the people how it's spelled. G-A-N-S-E-V-O-O-R-T. Don't blame me. I'm not a moron, but I mean Gansevoort Street in the Meatpacking District.
It's the old Dutch thing, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm not on board with the old Dutch thing, I guess. This Friday from 6 to 9. So let's get back into this, into what's going on in London. Apparently, the alerts have been raised to the highest alerts ever, obviously, because they are thought to be more attacks being plotted. There is, at count now, 51 people dead, over 700 injured, and investigators are focusing a lot of attention right now on the King's Cross Tube Station because all the trains that had bombs on them passed through that station, and now they find that many of these devices seem to be have been composed with military-grade explosives, dude.
Yeah, and see, now this flies in the face of what the London police were just saying over this past weekend, actually, that they thought that these bombs were relatively crude. The timeline was different. Originally, they said the bombs had gone off over a 20 minute to half hour stretch. Now it turns out they were seconds apart, except for the one on the bus. And they have raided, apparently, some homes up in the northern...
Early
this morning, starting about 1:30 Eastern time, a coordinated series of raids in an area just outside of Leeds, in a place called Beeston, which is southwest of Leeds, which is in West Yorkshire, which is in the middle of the country.
52 people, I made a mistake, have been counted as dead in England. The reason they're investigating this this bus... apparently is because the bodies of whoever was sitting nearest to the bomb, if not on top of the bomb, are revealing a lot of information about the type of explosives they're used. And apparently, if I can be graphic disturbing, a decapitated head was found near the bus, indicating to some, certainly Israeli intelligence have said, that when that is the case, when you find that at the scene of an explosion, it indicates that it was most likely a suicide bomber. Now, what they're trying to figure out with the bus investigation is whether or not this was a suicide bomber or some sort of mishap in an attempt to do a second line of explosions. Like, they're speculating that it was either a suicide bomber or this guy was going to plant another bomb that to go off after the first three, or something went wrong in terrorist terms. And killed all these people.
Well, the Metropolitan Police are speculating that the guy may well have been looking to plant the bomb to explode at the time people were fleeing the train station.
Right, right.
And that might have been the original purpose, but something happened. They sealed off the area too quickly. So the guy apparently was, again, according to the speculation of the police here, making other plans, whatever thing, went off.
Scotland Yard is also reaching out to commuters and tourists who might have taken pictures with their mobile phones or with video cameras. They're reaching out to everyone, obviously looking over security cam footage. The most disturbing element of this whole thing is that in terms of the bomb makers, they think one guy did the bomb making. They're looking at that this is military-grade explosives. Where did it come from? They're assuming that it might have been brought in from the Balkan region. It might have been, who knows where, it could have come from Iraq. It could have come from anywhere. But the fact that it is a military grade has made it very difficult for them to identify bodies because of the power of these bombs. And also, you know, they don't know where the bombers are, and they're only making assumptions when they say that they could be connected to the Madrid bombings because of the style. So they just don't know anything yet. When we come back, you know, what is reality in relation to truth and what is spin? Let's get into that a little bit. Also, McClellan coming up with his dance and trying to hold on to his reality. It is now 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
A free press is one where it's okay to state the conclusion you're led to by the evidence.
That was Bill Moyers. It's 34 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
To state the conclusion you were led to by the facts. Is that it? By the facts?
Yeah, that's it.
Let's play it again, Chris.
A free press is one where it's okay to state the conclusion you're led to by the evidence.
Evidence. I.e. facts. So that's going to play important in just a second. First, in a similar vein, thank God for the iNews 5000, the Wi-Fi headline translator, because sometimes it's impossible to really figure out what the mainstream press is saying. So thank God we got the machine. So let's feed it some headlines. All right. From Headline News, Karl Rove revealed his source in Time Magazine CIA case. Karl Rove revealed as source in Time Magazine CIA case. A translation, Rove disoriented by truth, barricades himself in office. From the Associated Press, NASA confident shuttle will launch on time. NASA confident shuttle will launch on time. Translation, NASA statement drowned out by nervous laughter, coughing fits. All right, from the New York Times, in video game, a download unlocks hidden sex scene. in video game, a download unlocks hidden sex scene translation. Make Mario look under the manhole cover next to the bouncing snake. Wow. Those kind of stunk. Anyways, let me hear that Bill Moyer sing again. Let me hear it again, Chris. You know what I'm talking about. The thing we just heard.
A free press is one where it's okay to state the conclusion you're led to by the evidence.
Now, according to the Washington Times, now mind you, the Washington Times is a Mooney-owned rag. It's a Mooney-owned right-wing junk paper. All right. But according to the Washington Times, more than two-thirds of the news stories on the three major networks covering the first 100 days of W's second term were negative. They cited an analysis by the Center for Media and Public Affairs. Now, the Center for Media and Public Affairs is a conservative organization, sort of hiding behind the nonpartisan moniker. Robert Lichter, the president of the CMPA, is a paid consultant to Fox News and a former fellow at the Conservative American Enterprise Institute. But the bottom line is that the reason why he's covered negatively might very well be, and certainly we believe this here to be true, that he's doing a bad job. And that is not spin. That is not Bush bashing. Sometimes if something is being portrayed as negative, it is for a reason. It's like the argument that the media only shows the bad part of the Iraqi war. Why don't they show the other part? See, I'm under the belief is if they showed all of it, it would be twice as bad. This whole idea that the right, who has this, you know, weird manufactured non-reality that they've built by exploiting people's fears, exploiting people's core values through cultural warfare, they've got millions of people believing that the truth is spin.
Well, this is, again, part of a classic Bush strategy. This organization, this Center for Media and Public Affairs, also publishes that study, Mark, you may remember a few years ago, about college professors on campuses across America and how liberally biased they were. That was their study.
Yeah, it sounds like a David Horowitz-fueled issue there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and remember that this CMPA was funded in part on behalf of people like Pat Buchanan, Pat Robertson, and other arch-conservatives. And this kind of thing is generally classified for conservatives as Bush bashing. Okay, they're saying, well, this is part and parcel of the media liberal bias in not giving Bush a fair break. That's how they frame this entire discussion. But then again, if you start looking at the facts, at the evidence, as Bill Moyers has pointed out, time after time after time, we find the same kinds of lies. We find the same kinds of rationalizations. We find the same kind of parsing that's going on in the Rove case to make sure that nothing backwashes on the president of the United States.
They do it through a barrage of mixed messages. Yep. They do it through blame dispersal. They do it through, you know, making people disappear out of the press for a period of time so people forget or people no longer know what the consolidated message is, who said what and when. They make it confusing. They create a certain chaos. And through that chaos, they sort of barricade themselves in this idea that they are righteous. And the whole non-reality, the illusion that they're making is starting to crack, which we'll hear from Scott McClellan, you know, in just a few minutes. It's a very disturbing and bordering on criminal misleading of a lot of American people who no longer have a barometer for the truth because there is no major news source. There are blogs on both sides, and there is no place, you know, there. It's very easy for people to say, well, that's just spin. Bush could get on television with a copy of the Constitution and wipe his butt with it and hold it up and show people, and there'd be half the country would say, oh, see what Clinton made him do?
Yeah. I mean, it really is getting that ugly. When you have a situation where American forces are told not to go into London, after Bush turns around and says, you know, we're not retreating one inch on the war on terror, these are the kinds of contradictions must be driving folks crazy.
Well, you know, I know what they would say to that. If you were to hold that up to one of these right-wing, narrow-minded idiots who only talk in talking points, if you were to say, he just said this last night, that we're not going to, what did he say?
We're not retreating.
We're not retreating in the face of terror, and the next day 12,000 Air Force troops are told not to go into London. If you were to draw that as evidence of him, you know, being, you know, as going against his word, a right-wing freak would be like, oh, come on. Come on. I mean, it's clear that it's just not safe there for that day. I mean, tomorrow they'll probably go in.
Yeah, right. Mark, the scary thing about this is that you see on the one hand all of this planning, all of this cunning, all of this cleverness when it comes to covering his behind, but when it comes to a plan for Iraq, when it comes to actually sitting down and making sure that American troops are not going to be over there forever, when it comes down to having a plan about Social Security or any of these major initiatives that the Bush administration has launched, we don't see the same level of planning as we do when they're planning to cover their butts.
And when how about when they're planning or should be planning on indicting one of the architects, Karl Rove, guilty of treason?
Yeah, Frank Lloyd
Rove. Karl Rove, at par, at line, in the same, worse than a terrorist, compromising a CIA operative's identity, a threat to national security. Karl Rove, guilty of treason, prosecutable for perjury, and McClellan trying to hold, is prosecutable a word? Okay, sure.
Yeah.
And McClellan trying to hold the non-reality together.
Humana.
In the face of an actual, press assault on him. Thank God the press did this. We're going to hear all that as it evolves in just a couple of minutes. So that's coming up. Stay with us. It's 41 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
Hey. 46 past the hour, you're listening to Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
This is Air America Radio. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. The United Nations says Japan is a powder keg of racism. The investigator was especially shocked at the discrimination that Koreans and Chinese face in Japan, commenting, quote, it's ridiculous, they all look the same to me, unquote. Ethnic Koreans complain that when they shop in Japanese stores, the owners always watch them like they're going to steal something. Morristown, New Jersey has been named the best town in America by Money Magazine. Some of the towns that didn't win were Bainbridge Island, Washington, Naperville, Illinois, Toxic Landing, Tennessee, and Arion Falls, Idaho. U.S. workers say they waste 2 hours a day. Americans also waste countless business hours flirting with coworkers, which is also nonproductive. Have you ever known one of those office flings to work out? I mean, after the hot secret 2 month sex period? Anything? U.S. workers waste an average of 2 hours a day, though on Morning Sedition, our producer says Mark and I waste three.
Oh.
Hello.
We're ahead of the curve.
All right, that's your Morning Sedition clip notes for today. Hey, folks, let's get into this. Given that Karl Rove basically, I believe, is guilty of treason, I believe that he did say, you know, he did tip the identity of Valerie Plame. You know, if you want to get hung up with the semantics, that he didn't say Valerie Plame, undercover CIA operative. What he did say was Joe Wilson's wife, Ambassador Joe Wilson's wife. You could have done a Google search and found out what her name is. So he is guilty. He's guilty of treason, of compromising the identity of a CIA operative. And that is a fact, given that that this was confirmed, that he was Time reporter Matthew Cooper's source for information that compromised the cover of CIA operative Valerie Plame. And, you know, in the discussions that Cooper made notes about that were turned over to the grand jury by Time Magazine, this is a truth. Now, Scott McClellan was asked about this yesterday in two different press conferences. Scott McClellan, spokesperson for the White House. Now, Scott McClellan, back in September of 2003, when this thing started to surface, made some statements, as did Bush in June of 2004. So let's start with those and build up to yesterday's disaster, the train wreck that is Scott McClellan trying to hold the seams of the right wing, you know, illusion together unsuccessfully. But this is Scott McClellan in reference to, you know, whoever leaked this information about Valerie Plame, which was not known at that time. This is Scott McClellan in response to that of September of 2003.
The president has set high standards, the highest of standards, for people in his administration. He's made it very clear to people in his administration that he expects them to adhere to the highest standards of conduct. If anyone in this administration was involved in it, they would no longer be in this administration.
So they would be fired. Scott McClellan's saying in September of 2003 that if anybody in the administration is guilty of this revelation, this leak, this this act of treason, they would be fired, rightfully so.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that's amazing about this, Mark, we're talking about a statement made in September of 2003. We're almost to September of 2005, and this thing is still going on.
Right.
It's amazing.
And here's George Bush with a reporter, okay, and this is in Sea Island, Georgia. This is June 10th, 2004.
Given recent developments in the CIA leak case, particularly Vice President Cheney's discussions with investigators, do you still stand by what you said several months ago, suggestion that it might be difficult to identify anybody who leaked the agent's name, and do you stand by your pledge to fire anyone found to have done so?
Yes, and that's up to the U.S. attorney to find the facts.
There you go. It's up to the U.S. attorney to find the facts, and yes, they will be fired. Now, here is McClellan talking at a press conference yesterday.
Does the president stand by his pledge to fire anyone involved in a leak of the name of a CIA operative?
Terry, I appreciate your question. I think your question is being asked related to some reports that are in reference to an ongoing criminal investigation. The criminal investigation that you reference is something that continues at this point. And as I've previously stated, while that investigation is ongoing, the White House is not going to comment on it.
If I could point out, contradictory to that statement, on September 29th, 2003, while the investigation was ongoing, you clearly commented on it. You were the first one who said if anybody from the White House was involved, they would be fired. And then on June 10th of 2004, Sea Island Plantation, in the midst of this investigation, when the president made his comments that, yes, he would fire anybody from the White House.
We just heard those.
So why have you commented on this during the process of the investigation in the past, but now you've suddenly drawn a curtain around it under the statement of we're not going to comment on an ongoing investigation?
Again, John, I appreciate the question. I remember very well what was previously said. And at some point, I will be glad to talk about it, but not until after the investigation is complete.
If he appreciated the question, why didn't he answer the damn question? Whether the investigation is complete or not, Rove is in an office somewhere behind this guy, just sitting there twiddling his thumbs, hopefully sweating. You know, a statement needs to be made. Rove should be fired. You know, he is guilty of revealing this woman's name, whether he said it was Valerie Plame, CIA operative, or whether he said it was Joe Wilson's wife. And the White House is just sitting there saying that, we're not going to comment on it because it's under investigation. There's a court, a trial in process. It's ridiculous. Now, this is from yesterday. This is McClellan at another press conference with David Gregory going after him from NBC News.
Scott, can I ask you this? Did Karl Rove commit a crime?
Again, David, this is a question relating to an ongoing investigation, and you have my response related to the investigation, and I don't think you should read anything into it other than we're going to continue not to comment on it while it's ongoing.
Do you stand by your statement from the fall of 2003? When you were asked specifically about Carl and Elliot Abrams and Scooter Libby, and you said, I've gone to each of those gentlemen, and they have told me they are not involved in this. Do you stand by that statement?
And if you will recall, I said that as part of helping the investigators move forward on the investigation, we're not going to get into commenting on it. That was something I stated back near that time as well.
Go get him. Get him.
I mean, this is ridiculous. The notion that you're going to stand before us after having commented with that level of detail and tell people watching this that somehow you decide not to talk, you got a public record out there. Do you stand by your remarks from that podium or not?
And again, David, I'm well aware, like you, of what was previously said, and I will be glad to talk about it at the appropriate time. The appropriate time is when the investigation...
Why are you thinking when it's appropriate, when it's inappropriate?
If you'll let me finish.
No, you're not finishing. You're not saying anything.
Yes.
You stood at that podium and said that Karl Rove was not involved, and now we find out that he spoke about Joseph Wilson's wife. So don't you owe the American public a fuller explanation? Was he involved or was he not? Because contrary to what you told the American people, he did indeed talk about his wife, didn't he?
David, there will be a time to talk about this, but now is not the time to talk about it.
Do you think people will accept that, what you're saying today?
No. I responded to the question.
Well, you're in a bad spot here, Scott, because after the investigation began, after the criminal investigation was underway, you said, October 10th, 2003, I spoke with those individuals, Rove, Abrams, and Libby. As I pointed out, those individuals assured me they were not involved in this. From that podium, that's after the criminal investigation began. Now that Rove has essentially been caught red-handed, peddling this information, all of a sudden you have respect for the sanctity of the criminal investigation?
No, that's not a correct characterization, Terry.
I
think
yes,
you are well aware of that. We know each other very well, and it was after that period
Come on, buddy. Investigators
had requested that we not get into commenting on
criminal
investigation. And we want to be helpful to the bottom of this, because no one wants to get to the bottom of more than President of the United States.
Yeah, that's a bunch of malarkey crap.
Well, wait a minute. Now, here's a question then. He's saying that it was soon after September 29th of 03 that the investigators asked him not to comment. Yet in June of 04, which is what, 6 months later?
Mm-hmm.
9 months later. Bush did comment.
Now, they're in trouble, and you can hear McClellan's voice is right into his throat. He wants nothing more than to go, okay, you're right, Karl Rove is the guy, all right? What do you want from me? I guess I'm out of work.
I appreciate the question.
Yeah, no,
That's hilarious.
Something's got to give in the next couple of days. Either Rove's going to cop to something, or he's going to make a statement, or somebody's got to say something, because the jig is up here. I mean, Rove is guilty of this. Rove leaked the information. If you want to get hung up with semantics in terms of name or Joe Wilson's wife, whatever. He is guilty of compromising the national security of this country.
Well, what we're starting to see now is an increased drumbeat inside Congress to actually get to the bottom of these statements, these contradictory statements that are coming out of the White House. And right after the break, we're going to be talking to New Jersey Senator Frank Lautenberg, who has gone so far as to say that Karl Rove needs to give up his security clearance. Now, that's a very deep statement. When the architect of the Bush campaign can't get into the White House because he doesn't have a security clearance anymore, what are we talking about?
Yeah, I want him out altogether. I don't want them to pay lip service to any sort of punishment or reprisals. I want him out. I want him fired. I mean, it's not like this guy's going to die. You know, Karl Rove is never going to die politically. But I want him out of this administration. I want him out of this White House. You know, he is a traitor.
Well, you want to measure him for prison stripes. That's
sure.
What you want to do.
He's like a terrorist. He's worse than a terrorist. He compromised the national security in the broadest sense. This guy is a traitor.
And for what? For retribution against someone that dared criticize this administration.
You made an example out of him.
Yep.
So Frank Lautenberg will be on in just a few minutes. You don't want to miss that, because he's getting a little momentum going in the Senate.
There you go.
To at least take some of Rove's stripes away. You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. This is Air America Radio. It's 57 past the hour, people.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Air America Radio. We're right in the middle of it here. Given that Karl Rove is basically guilty of treason for compromising the undercover identity of Valerie Plame in statements that have been uncovered in Matthew Cooper's notes that were turned over to the grand jury by Time Magazine, where Karl Rove referred to him as the wife of Ambassador Joe Wilson. Anyone had to do is do a Google search. You want to get hung up on semantics and say you didn't say her name, that's your problem. This dude is guilty of compromising national security. He is at par with terrorists in my eyes, and maybe on paper they might get him on perjury. So we listened to McClellan's statements yesterday. Scott McClellan, spokesperson for the White House, which were just a wall of garbage. The guy gave nothing. They're holding their fake reality together just barely. New Jersey Democratic Senator Frank Lautenberg yesterday called on President Bush to revoke Karl Rove's security clearance. Given that the president has said that he would fire anyone, as we heard before, we'll hear again in a little while from the president and from spokesperson McClellan almost a year ago or more, found to be involved. He would fire anyone involved in the leak of Valerie Plame's name. That sounds like a pretty reasonable request since we know who it is now. Senator Lautenberg joins us on the phone this morning. Good morning, Senator.
Hi, Senator.
I'm ready to go to war.
Okay.
And to make sure that Karl Rove, who loves trying to identify people as scoundrels and calling them names and suggesting that liberals coddle terrorists while they get after them. And here this man had the audacity to look for others to blame, get people punished. And he's the guy who tells all.
He compromised national security. He's guilty of treason on some level, isn't he?
I certainly believe so, and I hope that they will prosecute him to the full extent of the law if he's perjured himself, because on one hand, he's said that he knew nothing. On the other is that he's accusing everybody else of being the leaker, and he's the whistleblower extraordinaire.
Senator Lautenberg, you have called for Karl Rove's security clearances to be pulled by the White House. What effect would that have on his access to the president?
Well, I assume that what they would have to do is keep him out every time a word about security comes up. And while that's not, in my view, sufficient punishment, the fact is that they'd be violating the law if he was included in anything of a classified nature.
Senator Lautenberg, how are senators yourself, and hopefully you're pulling together a bunch of other guys and women to do this, how are they going to hold him to his word to make this firing?
Well, what we're going to do is continue to protest. Let the American people know. If anyone watched Scott McClellan yesterday and saw his mini filibuster, his reluctance to talk and say that this was not the time, this was not the place, it was the cheapest of tricks that they're trying to pull. But the American people are seeing through this, and they know very well that this is not untypical of this administration, to call others names while they themselves are the scoundrels. Look at what's happening with the Halliburton.
Mm-hmm.
I've written five times to the chairperson of the Committee on Government Accountability, and she refuses to give a hearing, including Halliburton, as an overview to see where we're spending our money and what Halliburton's relationship is, accused of taking millions of dollars.
Yeah, just duffel bags full of money.
Right?
Yeah.
Abandoning trucks because they were out of gas.
And,
doing all kinds of cost-plus things that just cost the American taxpayer money while they profited. So when you see that kind of a mindset, refusing to give a hearing, as chairman of the committee, she ought to step right up and say, yeah, we've done diploma mills, we've looked at all those kinds of things, but not with Halliburton. So here we have the same situation virtually, and that is try to shut them down. So that no one can find out the truth. But we're not going to give up. We're going to be after this fellow all the time. It's criminal, not for Judith Miller, but for Judith Miller to be in jail while he so boldly pulled the sneak of the ear by himself being the leaker. Now it's public information. So the president's got to respond in some way.
Senator Lautenberg, at the root of all this appears to be an effort on the part of the White House to silence a critic, that critic, of course, being Ambassador Joe Wilson. You have a long history in politics. Have you ever seen a presidential administration, use these kinds of tactics against its critics?
No, but I'm sure it's happened, Mark, but question is that with these folks who are so quick to call people names, so quick to challenge people's patriotism, by the way, when neither the president nor the vice president nor Karl Rove, when they had a chance to serve their country in action, refused to put on a uniform for school deferments.
Yep.
But yet nothing prevents them from calling the other guys unpatriotic, and it's outrageous.
They're shameless and they're arrogant. Do you get a sense that that any of that is chipping away, Senator Wattenberg, that they are getting nervous, or is there a change in tone in relation to this Roe revelation?
No, there's a certain arrogance that accompanies their view that permits them to go merrily along with the things crashing down around them and not paying any attention. What their mission is confrontation, and say what you want, do what you want, but blame everybody else if there's a mistake.
Now, I know this morning some of your fellow senators are having breakfast with President Bush in a preliminary discussion about the replacement or the nominee to replace Sandra Day O'Connor. Is there any indication that the president is going to listen to Democrats in this nomination process?
Well, I'll tell you, this mess with Roe may make the process a little more honest.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, we don't see any indication other than the fact that the president is determined, as he has been with almost everything in these last couple of years, to do it his way, regardless of the truth. One need only look at the press conference he held at Fort Bragg just a couple weeks ago, when in front of all those uniformed soldiers, those who are serving our country, and talk about Iraq and the pace that things are moving at and try to justify what's happening with the killing and the attacks, and have that reflect his attitude on May of 2003 when he stood on the deck of the aircraft carrier said, mission accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, we've lost over 1,700 people.
Horrible.
Yeah. Senator, I'm not sure if our listening audience understands how these gatherings, the process in them, but is it possible that the senators who are meeting with the president today will bring up Karl Rove, even though the meeting's about something else?
Probably not. There is a certain degree of courtesy that that should be maintained. Now, he could, in order to make the case, bring it up to them and find some way of getting Rove off the hook. To get Rove off the hook, they ought to throw, in order to be poetic, throw at him the book.
Senator Frank Wattenberg, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Senator.
Keep up the good work.
You too. You have a good day. That was Senator Frank Wattenberg of New Jersey, who agreed with me, saying that
said it was treason.
Said it was treason. We're going to get into that more a little further into the show. We're going to hear more. We're going to hear those Scott McClellan things again. I think we should do that again. That was good fun in terms of really seeing them squirm. Also coming up, I want to, you know, we got to go back to London, and we got to, you know, we got to get back into that. So stay with us, folks. There's been some interesting revelations in the investigation in terms of what quality explosives were used. They were military quality, and where did they come from? It's 15 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Good morning, Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Yeah.
As of today, we're on AM 1380, Progressive Talk for Baton Rouge. How do you like that, man?
I'm down.
Going in Louisiana. I haven't been there.
What,
I've been
Louisiana?
To New Orleans.
I've been to New Orleans.
I like New Orleans.
Is New Orleans part of Louisiana?
Of course.
Sometimes, you kind of get a sense sometimes that New Orleans is just like a completely separate place from the rest of the state.
Definitely its own world.
Yeah.
Rally to reform the Patriot Act. The New York Civil Liberties Union and People for the American Way are holding a rally today at the New York Public Library at 5th Avenue and 41st Street, starting at noon. Also, this Friday, we'll be broadcasting from Restaurant Florent on Ganzevoort Street.
Yeah!
Ganzevoort Street in the Meatpacking District of New York City. That's right across the street from that Martelleria where I used to eat the porterhouses back in the day.
Oh, you used to eat porterhouses back
in
the day?
You know that. That's a few months
ago. Well, no, you know, that whole Meatpacking District used to be full of dive bars and S&M joints and bondage places
now
and stuff
like
that.
Now it's very
hot. Not that I know anything about.
No, that was you back in the day. Yeah, some of those, some people are still hanging around. I'd be curious to see what kind of people are hanging around all night, because Florent's open all night,
and the night before
is Bastille Day. Steve Earle's going to come down and hang out with us and play some songs.
All right.
That's very cool. We'll be giving away free coffee, tons of other free stuff. The Restaurant Florent on Ganzevoort Street in the Meatpacking District this Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. Also, so a lot of you know this. You can podcast Morning's Edition. You can take it along with you as you go to work on your iPod, which I have now.
Ooh.
But not big enough. I'm not getting into it. We got things to do. Go to morningsedition.com to learn more. Into this a little bit, Riley. It's obviously the London terror alerts are higher than they've ever been. They are still fearing further attacks. 52 people have reported dead, over 700 injured in the attacks that occurred last Thursday. And investigators are focusing a lot of attention on the obviously on the King Cross tube station, because all the trains that had bombs on them passed through there. They think that the plotters or the bombers met there and dispersed from there. A lot of attention is being paid to the bus explosion, because apparently from the remains of people who were close to that bomb, they're learning a lot about the explosives themselves. They're stating now that they are probably military grade, maybe smuggled in from the Balkans. Maybe from Iraq. Who knows where they came from? But it certainly leaves a dark and horrible question as to they don't know where these guys are. They don't know where these bombs came from. There's so little they know. You reported earlier, Riley, that they're doing some searches this morning.
Yeah, they were doing searches up in West Yorkshire, which is the largest city of which is Leeds. And there's a small town outside of Leeds called Beeston, where apparently they cordoned off an area about 6:30 a.m. local time and went through there looking. I think they searched in all about four or five apartments. But, Mark, you're right. These explosives, they have no clue where they could have come from. It's gotten so far afield, in fact, that a Spanish official, who remained anonymous, denied a report in Spain that suggested that 80 pounds of bomb material was still missing from the Madrid train bombings of last year.
Wow. And President Bush made a statement yesterday that sounded a little like this.
In the face of such adversaries, there is only one course of action. We will continue to take the fight to the enemy, and we will fight until this enemy is defeated. America will not retreat in the face of terrorists and murderers.
In a related story, all 12,000 members of the Air Force, all 12,000 members of the Air Force that are stationed in Britain have been told not to travel in inner London because of the risk of further bomb attacks.
Obviously, undermining what Bush just said? Is
obviously,
that what you're
undermining. It's in complete contradiction to
yes,
what
is.
He just said. And the MPs, apparently, and some people in Britain were like, oh, that's real nice. You know, we were right there for you after 9/11. We've been right there for you the whole way. But, all right, fine. You guys go ahead and stay at the base. We'll just shoulder this ourselves here.
Some of these people are fuming, Mark, and rightly so. This is George W. Bush standing with the British. This is George W. Bush paying lip service to all this stuff. And then what?
Yeah, exactly.
They're turning around and doing this.
Exactly. You know, sometimes, Mark, it's not easy being a liberal, my friend.
Yes.
We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, I'm feeling a little crappy, Riley. You know, I always pride myself on my anti-consumerism. You know, I'm not a trendy guy, Brother Riley. I don't ever just jump out there and buy the new thing just because it's new and hot and cool.
But you went out and bought the new thing that was hot, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I broke down. I got an iPod. But that's not the problem, Riley. Having my music in a little portable container is kind of cool, but I realize the iPod can become this addictive thing. All right, people use them to shut out the world, so I figured, you know, I'll just buy the mini and I won't get to, you know.
Yeah, yeah, okay, so you put a cap on it by buying the small one. You can control the small one.
Yeah, okay, but I find that the mini only holds 1,500 songs.
Wait a minute, that's not enough?
No way, man. I've got over 600 CDs, okay, so now I'm screwed and I'm going to have to buy another one, the bigger one. It's like I bought the hybrid car, I drove it for 5 minutes, and now I want a Cadillac Escalade with the Gucci paint job and obnoxious spinning rims. You dig?
So, what's your big issue here, Mark?
Well, I fell into the consumer trap, Riley. All right, more. I got to have more. I mean, come on. Nobody needs an iPod, but now I'm whining because I don't have the big one. Now I'm one of them, man. I'm a pod zombie.
All right, I think I have your penance.
All right, hit me, Brother Riley.
You've gotten away from the way music was supposed to be listened to. For your penance, go see some live music, and then buy yourself a turntable and listen to vinyl albums and hear some great music before it got cold and digitized. I'm talking Al Green, Marvin Gaye, Curtis Mayfield, artists that weren't at all about consumerism and the latest trendy thing.
All right, Brother Riley, but how about instead of buying a turntable and old vinyl, I'll just come spend the day at your house this weekend and listen to your records.
Hey, hey, who's doing the penance here? Now go forth and sin. No more. And don't come near my house, all right?
All right. Amen. Well, thank you, Brother Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, please, please give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. And confess to Brother Riley and myself.
Yes.
And don't be afraid. You know, if it's eating at you, it's time to unburden yourselves, people. We'll be taking your confessions after this, so please continue listening. It's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio, 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's the Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio. We're taking your confessions, you know, because it's that time. It's liberal confessional time. We've got our first sinner from our new station in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. That's AM 1380 WYNK. Mike, what is your sin this morning?
Father, I have sinned.
Yes. Uh-oh. Okay, what is it? What do you
what
got?
Is your sin?
Oh, God. I'm waiting for Al Franken.
Uh-huh.
I'm a blue neck in a redneck state.
You're a blue neck in a redneck state.
I feel guilty.
You feel guilty.
I have guilt, Father.
Have you ever been out of Louisiana?
I took the A train from the Queens Brooklyn line to the Lower East Side for 3 years.
Okay, so you lived in New York for 3 years. I think it's probably a bigger sin that you went back to Louisiana, but you know we have a lot of people like you in Louisiana, and I want to reach out.
I'm not dating my first cousin.
Okay,
I
want to reach out to you here, Mike, and I want to say that in penance for your sin, what you have to do, because there are a lot of good people like you there in Louisiana that may be blue necks, that may not think that the redneck way is the right way, you need to drive your car around. You need to go buy yourself some new speakers, get those kinds that blare out of the trunk, and I want you to drive around and play Air America all day long. Drive through the streets of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, blaring that music out of your windows.
You're trying to get me shot, Father.
You have sinned. That's your penance.
I need a bumper sticker, Father.
Stay strong, Mike. Stay strong. We'll try and get you a bumper sticker if you're not shot by the time it comes. Thanks for listening, buddy. Welcome aboard.
Dog.
Okay, man. Take it easy.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
We got a Brian in training there?
That guy, he put the effort in. He worked it. He was method confessing there. That was from Baton Rouge. Now we got Beth listening to us on LIB in Brooklyn. Beth, what's your sin this morning?
Hey.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
I love your show.
Thank you.
My question is, I'm a diehard liberal, and I'm dating a Republican and have been for a couple of years.
Okay, you're diehard liberal. You've been dating a Republican for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that I have a long commute for work, and I could take the train, but I dropped.
Okay, so you could take the train, but you drive to work.
Yeah, so I could, like, help the environment and take the train, but I don't.
I get it.
And the third one is I used to be kind of anti-diamonds,
yeah,
synthetic, but I just got, like, my first set of diamonds, and they're really pretty, and I kind of like them.
So, wait, are you going to marry this Republican?
I do believe, yeah.
Okay, well, we have a problem here. These aren't sins. You have a pathological problem, a psychological illness of some kind. Apparently, you seem to enjoy propelling your life by self-hatred. And,
okay.
Yes, I do. Yes, I understand exactly what where you're coming from. But this many sins is just is untreatable. But you know, I do think that your penance is that you do need to at least, at the very least, take the train when you can. Come on, Beth.
I know. I have been switching off because gas prices are a little high, but yeah.
And also, I want you to go up to your Republican. Is he your fiance now?
No.
Well, you should ask him that. You know, they do have, these diamonds that the people don't die over. They're called, what are they called again? Conflict-free diamonds from Canada.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I really highly doubt, Beth, that you're going to ask him to return the diamonds for conflict-free diamonds, but I just want to let you know in the future for when you demand a rock from this guy that that you're going to stay with him the rest of your life. What is wrong with you? But anyways.
I'm trying to convert him. It's.
You're trying to convert him?
Okay,
that's a penance. That's a penance. That's good. That's good. But tell him when he gives you the big rock that you want one that doesn't have the blood of many all over it.
Yeah, I'll definitely make that specification.
Okay, good, Beth. Thank you for listening.
All right.
Wow. Nice. Going to marry a Republican. Drives to work when she can take the train and just took a diamond off the Republican.
The Republican must be paying for her parking.
Oh, yeah, she must have him wrapped around her little finger. I'll tell you that right now. Are we taking another one? Yeah, one more. All right. Who do we got? We got Patty listening in Indiana. What's your sin, Patty?
Hey, Patty.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
I got a real bad one, and it's for real. That's the worst part.
Uh-oh.
I've been having sex dreams about Tucker Carlson.
Whoa.
Well, it's Rachel Maddow's fault. I'm watching that stupid show just to see her, to see some good liberal voices. And, man, I don't know, when he undoes that little bow tie at the end of the show, it just gets to me.
Well, I think that there's only one penance for you, and I don't even think it's that big of a penance. You're just going to have to start integrating Rachel into those dreams.
Oh.
Whoa.
Welcome to Unfiltered. I'm Tucker Carlson.
Yeah.
Don't do that to me. But there's got to be something else I can do. Rachel's just not my cup of tea.
All right. Well, then what you're going to have to do is, what do you think, Riley? Maybe should she start emailing Tucker Carlson?
No,
not that. You have a boyfriend, do you?
Yeah.
Does he wear bow ties?
Tell him to put a bow tie on.
Yeah, I think you should buy him one.
and tell him that's the only thing he has to wear when you guys are having sex next time.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, I don't know if it'll work, but I'll try anything.
Well, that'll disabuse you and Tucker Carlson.
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling.
All right. Thank you for your confessions.
Yeah.
I was trying to broaden her mind a little bit, but she didn't want to broaden her mind. I guess. Oh, boy. Did I just say that? A little word joke? Hey, folks, we want to take you back a minute to yesterday. Scott McClellan, White House spokesman, responding to a very rigorous and impressive line of questioning by NBC News' David Gregory in relation to Karl Rove being a traitor. It's out there. It's confirmed that he did leak the name of Joe Wilson's wife. And he said it just like that. Joe Wilson's wife. Anyone could Google Joe Wilson and find out that his wife is Valerie Plame. His wife just happened to be an undercover CIA operative, and he leaked it and compromised national security, thus making him a traitor. And there's even a case to be made, hopefully, that he perjured himself. So this is all out. I know it. I'm telling you about it. So you're going to tell me Scott McClellan doesn't know about it? But he wouldn't budge. Not only did he filibuster, he created a wall of denial and just, you could see the leaks of the right-wing non-reality starting to break. So let's hear that. Let's hear NBC News' David Gregory going at Scott McClellan yesterday.
Scott, can I ask you this? Did Karl Rove commit a crime?
Again, David,
This is a question relating to an ongoing investigation, and you have my response related to the investigation, and I don't think you should read anything into it other than we're going to continue not to comment on it while it's ongoing.
Do you stand by your statement from the fall of 2003 when you were asked specifically about Carl and Elliot Abrams and Scooter Libby, and you said, I've gone to each of those gentlemen, and they have told me they are not involved in this. Do you stand by that statement?
And if you will recall, I said that as part of helping the investigators move forward on the investigation, we're not going to get into commenting on it. That was something I stated back near that time as well.
Scott, this is ridiculous. The notion that you're going to stand before us after having commented with that level of detail and tell people watching this that somehow you decided not to talk, you've got a public record out there. Do you stand by your remarks from that podium or not?
And again, David, I'm well aware, like you, of what was previously said, and I will be glad to talk about it at the appropriate time. The appropriate time is when the investigation...
When it's appropriate, when it's inappropriate.
If you'll let me finish.
No, you're not finishing. You're not saying anything. You stood at that podium and said that Carl Rove was not involved, and now we find out that he spoke about Joseph Wilson's wife. So don't you owe the American public a fuller explanation? Was he involved or was he not? Because contrary to what you told the American people, he did indeed talk about his wife, didn't he?
David, there will be a time to talk about this, but now is not the time to talk about it.
Do you think people will accept that, what you're saying today?
Again, I've responded to the question.
You're in a bad spot here, Scott, because after
calling him out on his lies.
After the criminal investigation was underway, you said, October 10th, 2003, I spoke with those individuals, Rove, Abrams, and Libby. As I point out, those individuals assured me they were not involved in this. From that podium, that's after the criminal investigation began. Now that Rove has essentially been caught red-handed, peddling this information, all of a sudden you have respect for the sanctity of the criminal investigation?
No, that's not a correct characterization, Terry, and I think you are well aware of that. We know each other very well.
Yeah, buddy.
It was after that period that the investigators had requested that we not get into commenting on an ongoing criminal investigation. And we want to be helpful so that they can get to the bottom of this, because no one wants to get to the bottom of more than President of the United States.
But he's not asking them to comment on, he's not asking McClellan to comment on a criminal investigation. What he's asking them to do is just say, was he or wasn't he? It's got nothing to do with the criminal investigation. The reports are out there.
It really comes down to reconciling contradictory statements.
Contradictory,
as simple as that.
With the proof sitting in front of you. Carl Rove was involved. He leaked it. He's a traitor. Let's get on with this. Answer the question, McClellan. You know who's going to call? With schedule, too. I hope we get him. Lawton Smalls.
Oh,
Planet Bush bureau chief is on the truth tour. He's on the junket.
Oh, so he hasn't been hearing all this Rove stuff, knock wood.
No, he's been in Iraq, man. I mean, he went over there with all those right-wing journalists who are going over there to sort of do their
straighten
thing.
Straighten everybody out.
And Lawton is with them, and he's supposed to call in shortly. I hope he does. So that's coming up next, if he calls, okay? It's 44 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
I pass the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
As you know, Morning Sedition has a staffer who lives in the strange right-wing world of our president. And this week, he will be doing a series of special reports from Iraq. And now on the phone, here's Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls live from the Green Zone in Baghdad. Good morning, Lawton. So how are you making out? Is it hot enough for you?
115 degrees. Doesn't bother me a bit. Folks are already calling me Lawton of Arabia. I'm a natural desert dweller, Mark, part Bedouin. The sun does my bidding.
So what, are you in you're in an air-conditioned room, aren't you?
What's your point? I'm a foreign correspondent on assignment for one day, and already you're trying to spin this thing.
All right. Listen up. Okay, Mr. Foreign Correspondent, what have you been doing in Iraq?
As you know, Mark, I'm here on the Truth Tour. Uh-huh. Me and a bunch of us right-wing radio talk show hosts are here to report the truth about America's glorious progress in Iraq with all the out all the negative sour grapes from you liberal media surrender money.
All right, all right, all right, all right. The truth tour. Now, come on, Lawton. Did you know this whole thing was organized by a right-wing public relations firm who works on conservative political campaigns, my friend?
Well, we are out in public. I mean, that's a no-brainer. You get an expert.
No. What I'm saying is this is a totally phony trip, micromanaged by the military and designed to prop up Bush's horrible poll numbers. Come on. This is worse than propaganda. This is like a Hollywood junket for Spider-Man or something. I'll bet you haven't even left your room yet, have you?
Well, if you want to split hairs about it, no. But this is a fact-finding mission, Mark. Uh-huh. And let me tell you, the reporting up to now has been a complete disconnect with what I'm seeing with my own eyes here
okay.
in Iraq.
All right, your own eyes, guy.
Disconnect.
All right, okay, so what about unemployment? I hear it's at like 27% there. That's like incredible. What did you find out about it, truth teller?
All the Iraqis around the compound here seem busy enough.
Yeah.
They've been getting us stuff, serving us dinner, cleaning up. No unemployment problem here. You got to cut through so much left-wing bias to even talk to you.
Okay, my friend, Mr. Foreign Correspondent.
Thank
Iraqi
you.
Medical officials say lack of clean water and sewage and the resulting waterborne illnesses mm-hmm. continue to be a big problem in many parts of the country. What have your keen powers of observation revealed to you since being in country there,
well,
Lawton?
I will confess, I have had explosive diarrhea ever since I got over here. But I'm sure I got that in New York. I mean, the water here is just fine. I've been drinking it all the time. It's kind of gritty. It's got some texture, but I like it.
Just curious there, Edward R. Murrow. How much Arabic do you speak?
Well, I had to learn the word for toilet right away. You know, and they're beautiful toilets, the nicest marble I've ever seen. President George W. Two-Terms Mandate Bush has clearly turned this place around toilet-wise.
Wait, buddy, you're not going to do any real reporting. You know that, right?
Well, if by reporting, you mean we're not going to be like those creepy hotel journalists from the mainstream media slinking around in hotel bars, drinking and cribbing other writers' notes and clips so they don't have to go out and cover the real war. We're going to get out there and report. I promise you that. Nose to nose with the Iraqis. Boots on the ground. Fair and balanced.
All right, dude. Look,
boots on the ground.
Hey, look, Lawton, you know what Al Franken said.
Well.
And you remember he's been over to Iraq to perform for the troops, so he knows his stuff.
Oh, yes, Mark. I keep a little red book of his quotations with me at all times.
He said, if they think that the military is going to let something happen to them while they're over there, come on. That's how stupid these people are. They think they can walk around and talk to shopkeepers. They don't realize how dangerous it is over there. What was that?
Fireworks, Mark. The Army PR fellas told us the locals are so happy now that President George W. Two-Terms Mandate Bush has liberated them, they shoot off fireworks all the time.
Dude, Lawton, those aren't fireworks. Oh, man. Lawton, are you okay, Lawton? Lawton.
Mark?
Yeah?
I've been under the bed for 2 days, but I'm not on the toilet. Fireworks my ass. This place is a hellhole. Nothing worse. Explosions all the time. The soldiers all have that worried look on their face. I thought New York was bad. That was nothing. This does not look like we are winning, Mark.
Oh, man.
This doesn't look like... And the other radio people hate me. They say, I'm in my way. You're stupid. Get out. It's so hot.
Oh, no. I'm sorry,
buddy. Freaking hot. Come and get me, Mark, please. No. I'd like to go home now.
I don't think so. I don't think you can, buddy.
Please.
Just try to take it easy, all right? Try
please.
To keep your head down, all right? Think about something else. Just take some deep breaths. That'll help.
Can I think about show tunes?
Yeah, whatever works, buddy. Whatever works. This is sad. I can't even figure out what song that is. I'm actually worried about it.
Oh.
You all right?
Ah.
You okay, buddy?
You know, journalism's easy, Mark. You just got to have integrity and ask the right questions.
All right.
Honesty.
Okay. Yeah, sure. All right. Goodbye, Lawton. Stay safe in Iraq, all right?
Well, thank you for that, Mark. I'll call you tomorrow with some more good news. God loves you. Deal with it.
All right, Lawton. It's amazing, though. He's out in Iraq. He's going to keep in touch with us, and... he's on the truth tour. Obviously, he's not going as well as he thought it was going to be. But
not hardly.
But, dude, I can't believe what we're going to have in the studio in a little while. You know, outside my friend Rick Overton, who's a hilarious comedian, known him for years, he's going to be playing over at Rocky Sullivan's with Crimmins and Credico and Thomas down there in New York. Where is that exactly? I got to find out where.
Rocky Sullivan's on the east? Yeah, it's on the east side. I knew that.
But after Rick, you know, we got Al Kooper coming in here. Now, Al Kooper, this is like the history of music, man.
Really?
Al Kooper he played organ on Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone, but that's just skimming
the surface.
Tip of the iceberg, man. He was part of the Blues Project with Stephen Stills and Michael Bloomfield. He founded Blood, Sweat, and Tears. He worked for Columbia Records A&R Department, where he recorded albums with Bloomfield and then Shuggy Otis. He did some of his own solo records there. He discovered Lynyrd Skynyrd. Now, this is a guilty pleasure I have. I'm not ashamed of it. When I was younger, I loved Lynyrd Skynyrd. In junior high school, I could tell you the titles of all their albums. I feel like Lawton all of a sudden. I could tell you the titles of all their albums. I actually could. I was a big Skynyrd fan, and Al Kooper found them back in 72. And he signed them.
This guy's been around. I mean, he did Who Wears Short Shorts, for God's sake, as part of the Royal Team.
One of the writers of Who Wears Short Shorts. He's done session work with Dylan, the Stones, Hendrix, The Who, George Harrison, Paul McCartney, Joe Walsh. He's scored movies. It's like going to be like having the history of music right here in the studio. That's Al Kooper is coming up.
Yeah.
And before Al, Rick Overton, as I said before, he's done his share of movies himself. He's working on a... Rick's always working on something in his head. The dude does some traveling in his mind, and he's building a philosophical system.
Really?
It's a lifelong project of Rick's, and I'm sure he's going to tell us exactly what's up with that. Also, did you see this story about that people waste 2 hours a day? Did you know that, Riley?
Heard this.
U.S. workers waste 2 hours a day. U.S. workers say they squander over 2 hours a day at the workplace with surfing the web, socializing with coworkers, and just spacing out. At the tune of $759 billion in annual paid salary that results in no apparent productivity. This is an online survey conducted by American Online. Yeah, I never had a real job.
I'm not buying this 2 hours wasted. What happens to a waiter that doesn't have to work for an hour and then has to bust it for three?
I'm not a waiter, but, you know, guys who sit in cubicles who are like,
that's different.
I am working. I talk to people, they spread it out. They don't want to get too much done all at once.
Yeah,
Hi, Rick Overton's coming up. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, 57 past.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, blah, six blah, blah, past blah, blah, the blah. Hour, folks. Six past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you, Riley?
I'm doing okay, man.
Yeah?
How
are you, Kalo? You all right?
I'm great, buddy.
All right, well, let's talk about this because I've been saying Karl Rove is a traitor for weeks. For weeks, and now it's finally been indicated. I've been substantiated. What's the word? I've been
vindicated.
Validated. Vindicated.
There you
I
go.
Knew it wasn't aided by no other than a U.S. senator. How about that? How about Senator Frank Lautenberg from New Jersey coming to my side, telling me that I'm not crazy? Can we hear that?
I'm ready to go to war to make sure that Karl Rove, who loves. Trying to identify people as scoundrels and calling them names and suggesting that liberals coddle terrorists while they get after them. And here this man had the audacity to look for others to blame, get people punished, and he's the guy who tells all.
He compromised national security. He's guilty of treason on some level, isn't he?
I certainly believe so.
How do you like that? Frank Lautenberg, Senator Frank Lautenberg, on our show earlier today, telling me I'm not crazy.
No one ever said you. Well, no, I don't know about your shrink, but you know.
It's an issue of legality. I mean, a lot of people are saying the perjury charge is the one to take him to task on, that, you know, they're going to find out whether he perjured himself. But clearly this guy, not unlike a terrorist, has compromised national security by outing Valerie Plame in a different language. He didn't say Valerie Plame, CIA undercover operative. He said Joe Wilson's wife. Do a Google. Google search. Again, didn't say Google search. I'm adding that.
Well, look, this is wholly consistent with the way Karl Rove has done politics since he started in this. Okay, this goes back. Remember, he was fired out of George H.W. Bush's campaign back in the day in 1992 mm-hmm. for the same kind of sleazy, low-life, low-ball politics that he did in trying to completely crush Ambassador Joe Wilson because Joe Wilson criticized the statement, which turned out to be false, that the Saddam Hussein's government was buying yellow cake from Niger in Africa.
And dig this. In talking about London and what went on there last week and what's going on there now, George Bush yesterday made a statement. Chris, can we do that? That is a number one. Number one, you know, we heard George Bush say this yesterday at the FBI Academy.
In the face of such adversaries, there is only one course of action. We will continue to take the fight to the enemy, and we will fight until this enemy is defeated. America will not retreat in the face of terrorists and murderers.
In a related story, all 12,000 members of the Air Force that are stationed in Britain have been told not to travel inside inner London because of the risk of further bomb attacks. Obviously, the British MPs, some people in Britain, some officials are saying, what? What are you? We were right there for you guys after 9/11. Now you guys aren't even going to come in. You're going to ruin our tourist industry on top of everything else and contradict the president's statement from yesterday?
Well, you know, this is precisely. I imagine that Tony Blair must be foaming at the mouth at this. I mean, here's a guy who put his political career on the line for George W. Bush, pursued a war that he knew should not have been prosecuted at the time, and yet this is how Bush pays him back?
Yeah, I know. It's mind-blowing because you know people are going to take it's going to scare people. Obviously, everyone's a little scared, but to tell the Air Force not to go into London, that's pretty hairy.
And what are you going to say to ordinary tourists? Go ahead and have a good time?
Yeah, exactly. So dig this. Moorestown, New Jersey, Riley, was named the best town by Money Magazine. Do you even know where Moorestown, New Jersey is?
Yeah, I do. I have a friend that lives there. It is a suburb outside of Philadelphia. It's down in the southern part of the state. I don't know how many black folks they got in Moorestown.
Well, that's just the case. I mean, that's the issue, right? I'm reading about Moorestown, New Jersey, and it's about 20,000 people. They're apparently very proud of something they call Random Acts of Kindness Week.
Yeah.
Okay. The price for a home is about $375,000. And in the article, it says, quote unquote, there's a buzzing downtown area full of law offices, antique shops, and independent shops such as Peter Pan Bakery and Happy Hippo Toys. Wow. That sounds electric.
Hey, man, don't knock it, but maybe that one of those acts of kindness will be to sell a house to a black man.
I'm not done, dude. Moorestown is still a place where the community musical production, this summer it's Oklahoma, is one of the biggest events of the year. Is this one of the best places in the world to live, or is this a nightmare? Rick Overton, who just walked into my studio.
Good morning.
Comedian, good improviser, morning. Actor. Star of movies, or kind of a, you're in the movies.
They allow me on the set. I'm allowed on.
You were in Groundhog Day, yeah. Mrs. Doubtfire, yeah. Jackpot, North Fork.
Yeah. North who?
North Fork.
Oh. North Fork.
That was an interesting movie.
It was about, the corporate cement world grinding all color out of ours.
Yes.
You know, how much, it's about eminent domain.
Yes.
Oh.
It is. It's true. It's about them moving a bunch of people off their property to fill it with water.
Yes. Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm Mark Maron now.
You are Rick Overton, my friend.
No, I'm Mark Maron. I'm sorry. Intellectual public domain. Now, I can take this from you. Eminent public domain. I can take your name now.
Oh, my God, I'm melting.
I'm taking you. I'm That's right.
Oh,
I'm
now
Mark Maron.
Wow, he's getting thinner.
I've absorbed you.
He's draining me, Riley.
He's getting thinner by the second over here.
How you doing, man?
I'm good, Tom.
Yeah, when did you get into New York?
A couple of days ago.
You can be a Rocky Sullivan's with Crimmins, with the Crimmer.
Yeah,
Warren
the big
Thomas.
Bear.
It's a battle of the no boundaries. No boundaries, people. I can't imagine. Do you ever get on stage with Warren Thomas and
sure.
just go at it?
You yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah,
man.
Yeah. Remember when chaos was just a theory?
Yeah. Now it's for real.
Oh, it's fact. It's chaos fact.
So what do you got going, man? What do you got working on? You got some big projects?
Yeah.
Is it the ongoing Rick Overton philosophy of the world? I know that whenever I get on the phone with you or whenever I talk to you, within seconds, I no longer have an identity and I'm absorbed into your mind somehow. Does that happen to a lot of people?
Oh, God. Well, it happened to me. And I'm just realizing that, do you remember when the first time. There's been like a few renaissances we can mark. We're in a brightly lit dark age right now.
Right, a brightly lit dark age. I'm glad we have the, at least it's lit.
Yeah, at least those, you can see where you're going, yes, you know, good. Into the plague.
That's good.
And so, but rock, paper, scissors, renaissance kills dark age.
Okay.
And last time it was when we were hippies.
Okay.
That was a renaissance, complete human behavior change.
Okay.
You can't run a war if no one shows up at the weapons factory.
Got it. I'm with you.
And so that's the part we need to work on again. It's partly pointing outward and whizzing out of the tent, and the other part is fixing the people in the tent there.
Okay.
We got to look like the fun it used to be. When hippies look like fun, people leapt off of their side.
Sure, I thought it was fun, and I was like six.
Yeah, fun.
When I was 6 years old, I'm like,
you saw how fun it looked.
Well, I did.
I'm older than you, and it was fun.
Yeah,
trust me.
And he's about your age. You guys, I think that you both lived it.
Yeah.
And like I knew that by looking at what the hippies were doing just when I was a kid, I'm like, there's no way I'm not going to be that. I want to be that.
Yeah.
And you're saying we got to bring that back?
Yeah.
Have you got any ideas, fashion ideas, anything?
Well, the thing is...
I know, it's deeper, isn't it?
You had to make your bell-bottoms. As soon as you bought your bell-bottoms, the 60s are over. The snake just came around the other side of your neck and got you on the other side.
Right.
Still got you.
Yeah, I get it. Right. We had some guys on here wrote a book, How Consumer Culture Became... How Counterculture Became Consumer Culture. They have an argument that that the 60s was really just a growth spurt of capitalism. But ideologically,
that's
wrong, right?
They're not marking off all the damage. We fired a president.
Yeah, okay.
You're fired. You're gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we canceled the war.
Uh-huh.
And that's because we cared more than rock. You can't now. We want to be rich, and you can't rock the boat when you're still waiting for it to come in, you know?
Right. Okay.
And so the thing, I can't go to the rally. My BlackBerry will be out of range.
Yeah, right. There's no cell reception at the rally.
That's what
How
I'm saying.
How can I go? What if I need to get in touch with the office?
Yeah.
Can't they arrange these rallies in a way that's more convenient
can
for
we
me?
E-rally? Can we e-rally?
Virtual rally.
Virtual rally.
They do. I've always said that. I said that, taking, political activism isn't forwarding email. I mean, to some degree it is, but at some point you got to get out and do the work.
That's it, man.
Yeah, right?
You have to be out. You have to make your human presence known. We keep forgetting that we're the most advanced technology on Earth. We make other technology.
But I don't know. I think they're starting to win. I think the things we're making are starting to take over.
My Palm Pilot is a genius.
Well, it is. Do you even remember the last time you had to... Do you remember anyone's phone number anymore? Do you know your number? Do you have anyone want to check your phone?
Yeah.
There was a time...
I have a chip for it.
You just put it right in?
Load it in my head.
I believe that. You've had that chip for a while. You had it before everybody else.
Yeah, but you put a bar magnet on my head and my childhood's gone.
All right, man. So let's continue this conversation with you in just a few minutes. We'll regroup here because my mind is half blown, as usual, with Rick Overton in the room blowing my mind. It always happens, too, when I talk to you. It's great
right
to see
back
you.
At you, brother.
Rick Overton is with us, a comedian and movie actor and philosopher. So stay with us. We got Al Kooper coming up, too, at 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on the air and online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
All right, 20 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Hey.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. That sound you hear is Al Kooper. And he's going to be out here in just a few minutes in the studio with us now. Rick Overton, the comedian, actor, philosopher, author, Emmy Award winner for writing on the Dennis Miller Show back when Dennis was Dennis and not whatever he is now, a cable news commentator for the wrong side, my friend.
Oh, he got scared for his kid's safety. That's how they get you. Be scared for your kids.
Yeah.
And he's my homie, too, I just found out.
Yes.
I know. I love Dennis. We don't agree politically, but I love the guy. And
yeah.
I know. I think one day, for the sake of his children, he'll see.
So now he is part of that cable news world.
No longer. He's off now.
Is he? That was it, huh? Maybe now back to M&M's commercials, or who knows? But anyways, he is part of that world, though, that never-ending sort of, blast box of talking points that we all go through and are through every day that so many people watch.
That thing that is lower than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's cable news is hypnosis. Here's a fun game to do. Watch Fox News. And by the way, Fox News, there's symbolism everywhere. I'm a dyslexic, except I'm tired of being ashamed of it. Mm-hmm. My school was ill-equipped to tell me that I was retarded when they told me so and put me in the special class with the kid who's nine who kicked his own dad's ass. You know? Uh-huh. And I call myself prolexic now. I say that we're the artists are the canaries in a social coal mine when something goes wrong. You come to us first.
If they have the courage. Yes,
that's
sir.
Right. Mm-hmm. yes, some do. And God bless you.
Yeah.
And so this is what I see with Fox News. Leave the sound off. Look how everyone's head is square.
Okay.
Look for simple stuff like that. They all have their hair carved square.
Okay.
They're completely square-headed. You'll start, if it's a drinking game, you'll be pounded in 9 minutes. You'll be under the table before the first commercial.
Identifying break. Squareheads?
Squarehead. Leave the sound off. And look at all the Hitler-esque angles and squares. And everyone else says, you have nice rounded features to you. You follow nature's form. Look up at the night sky. That's what you do.
These guys are all blocked off. Britt Hume, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity.
Leave the sound off and watch.
Squareheads.
You'll be screaming. When you see how blocked off they are.
Do you think this is a directive from Roger Ailes to square their heads?
I think it is something psychological. Prolexic spot this instantly. They're messing with our heads
Prolexic.
By blocking us. Prolexic. It is a gift.
Is that it? It is a gift. It's third eye open, my friend.
Third eye open.
Yes.
Oh, my good eye. And, wise guy.
Oh, we're going. See what happens? There's layers and layers. We enter.
It's a parfait.
Yeah. So this, what are you doing with this prolexic concept? Are you
I'm about putting
paper?
A book together. Yeah, yeah. It's about. I wonder how much rhetoric has been trained into me that isn't accurate. How much have I been told that isn't true? How many of my own terms for myself aren't my terms? How many of my opinions are just something I heard? Like Fox News, they just give you your opinion. It's like having a personal shopper. You don't have to make until your opinion maker dies within you.
Which has something to do with what we were talking about before, the surrendering of our consciousness to whether it's Fox News or a BlackBerry or whatever, is that, you know, we are blank slates that are being taken advantage of. I mean, we're volunteering.
It's a square thing telling us what to do.
There you go. You're going to be at Rocky Sullivan's tonight with Barry Crimmins, Warren Thomas, Randy Credico. That's on Lexington Avenue. If you're here in New York, between 28th and 29th Streets, if you want to sit at the feet of Rick Overton, the Buddha, he will enlighten you.
What? Have you heard about Mark's latest problem?
Well. No, what's the problem?
Mark.
Oh, don't tell him about the iPod.
What's the matter with the iPod?
Well,
there's an iPod right there.
Yeah, I know. Do you have one?
I don't.
Why?
What are you afraid of? The Inquisition.
What are you afraid of? Are you afraid of the same thing we're talking about right now?
I'm afraid it'll just every gadget I have is time I did not spend with a friend.
Exactly.
I miss my friends, man.
They're feeding on our time, my friend.
I love my friends.
It's a full-time job loading an iPod.
Yes.
You notice how he did that, though? It sounded like a Scientologist starting their spiel.
Yeah.
Oh, why don't you have one?
Yeah. No, but that's right.
Everybody expects the techno inquisition.
Yeah. I'll do it to you.
My trio.
One, Rick, you really should try
it. Oh, no.
Don't you love your... what kind of music do you like, Rick?
Oh, my God. The iPod people.
Pod zombies. Yeah. You really need to get one. They come at you. There's like 10 of them with their white headphones. We're at peace.
6 gigabytes. 40 gigabytes.
I'm running out of mental RAM.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's happening, dude.
I don't want my gadget. I have a Trio 650, and I spend half the day. I'm its bitch. Mm-hmm. It owns me. I chase it. Like, it all day I'm fixing it. It's like an alien relative who's ruining my life.
Do you know we were talking about Moorestown, New Jersey, which has just been nominated by Money Magazine
as the best
place in the world, practically. And we got a guy, Cohen, from Florida, ironically. Sam, he grew up, where'd you grow up, Sam?
Well, I grew up in the part of New Jersey known as not Moorestown.
Uh-huh.
It's Maple Shade, which is attached right next door to Moorestown, and I tell you, as a bone-deep liberal, you guys have shared some stories that have left me exasperated, but none as much as what you've said this morning about Moorestown, New Jersey.
This was Money Magazine that made the pick, all right? And apparently, it sounded horrendous to me, Sam.
I can smell the Mrs. Fields cookies from here.
Hey, wait a minute, Sam, are you talking about Moorestown or Morristown?
Moorestown.
Right.
Moorestown is north of
it. Where they have the State Trooper Depot.
But that's what that's the one.
And they got the Happy Hippo.
Yeah.
Big deal. I'll tell you about Moorestown. They're a dry town, first of all. No liquor involved.
Yeah.
And all of the liquor establishments in the town that I grew up in had two delivery vans, and one was unmarked for Morristown deliveries.
Okay. And apparently they got the RCA Victor dog every two blocks.
Yeah, there was a big RCA plant around there, and also they have, what was the one in Bhopal, the people that poisoned everybody in Bhopal, they got a big area around there.
Oh, wow, great. Yeah, that sounds like a great. Thanks for your call, Sam.
Was that Rick, Dow or DuPont? One of them.
Rick Overton.
Your safety comes first.
Rocky Sullivan's tonight. That's 28th and Lexington, June 28th and 29th with Barry Crimmins, Warren Thomas, and Randy Credico. Rick, thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Rick.
You. Thank you for inviting us today.
Thank
Al
you.
Cooper will be here momentarily to share the history of rock and roll. It's 27 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Once upon a time you dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you
sweet home Alabama, where the skies are blue. Sweet home Alabama,
you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you might find.
34 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's morning's edition here on Air America Radio. Our next guest has worked with Bob Dylan, the Rolling Stones, Jimi Hendrix. He was a member of Blood, Sweat, and Tears. He discovered Lynyrd Skynyrd. He's just released a new CD called Black Coffee, and he'll be at B.B. King's in New York City tomorrow night. Please welcome legendary musician, producer, songwriter, Al Cooper. Welcome to the show, Al.
You guys are way too high energy for me.
Don't worry. We flame out about 9:15.
Okay.
Thanks for being here, though.
We've been at it for like 2 hours.
I know. You've been drinking too much black.
There you go.
So this is great, man. This is your first album, a studio album in 30 years?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So did it take, so it's 30 years in the making, so to speak.
In a way, yeah.
And why'd you wait so long?
You got a problem with that?
No, not a problem at all. It's just like, it's just interesting to me when somebody takes it as much of a pause there.
At the time that I put the one out before that, mm-hmm. which was called Act Like Nothing's Wrong, I was signed to a new record company, and new in terms of it wasn't the one I did before.
Right.
And like they did this huge ad campaign, cost a lot of money, and big tour support
right.
and everything. And the record was about as good a record as I could have made at that time.
Right.
So like everything, all the stars fell in place like last night, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, if this doesn't make it, this record, I'm going to stop making solo albums
uh-huh.
because it's like a message from God.
You know? Okay.
So, you know, it didn't. And so I quit making solo albums.
But you did a lot of stuff in 30 years, man.
Well, yeah, but
wow.
I had to do something else, you know?
Yeah.
So about 10 years ago, I said, I think I'm ready to yeah. make another one because my skills have improved over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've written some really good songs. And then I couldn't get a record deal because I was like over 50.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
So I said, okay. I said, I can live with this.
Yeah.
Everything else is fine, you know? And so I just tucked it in.
Uh-huh.
And then I went and toured Japan, which is my biggest country.
So
in terms of like
Your own tour?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
In 2003.
Uh-huh.
And it was like incredible. It was like being in the Beatles or something.
Right.
they go nuts over there. And they get me there.
Uh-huh.
So the record company said, do you want to make a new album? I said, yeah. They said, well, we'd love for you to do that. So I said, in Japan, right? And they said, yeah. So, and then Steve Vai's record company.
Yeah, the guitar player.
His Favored Nations. They mm-hmm. came to me and said, well, what's happening with your album for the rest of the world? I said, haven't thought about it yet. He said, well, we'd like to put it out for the rest of the world.
Nice.
And I said, Yeah, that's okay.
Why not the rest of the world? Sure.
And so
that's where that's what we got. That's how we got black coffee.
So I couldn't get a record deal at age 50, but I got one at age 60.
There you go.
Congratulations.
Talk about miracles.
Yeah.
Al Cooper, you are, I think, uniquely suited to look at the music business over the long term. You've been in it for so long. There were horror stories in the 1950s. I heard them as a kid growing up about, you know, producers and record companies ripping artists off and all that sort of thing. Has it really changed all that much during the time you've been in this business?
Not at all.
Not at all?
Man. No, not really. Maybe 10%.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
See, people are still getting ripped off.
Well, it's not that. It's like a record company lends you the money to make an album. And then they distribute your album. And for that, nowadays, they get 80% of the record. Plus, they own it forever.
Okay.
Now, if you put that up in a court of law, I don't think that's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the beginning, it was they got 90%.
And they owned your soul.
And yeah. And you know, and so the same thing. So it's only changed about 10%. In the history of the record business, the entire history of the record business.
So a lot of people, like, if people don't know who are listening, I mean, you played organ on Like a Rolling Stone. You played the keyboards on You Can't Always Get What You Want. You worked with Hendrix. You've worked with, as a musician, some really, you know, great, you know, you've been part of this some of the most seminal music ever, you know, made, you know, Michael Bloomfield and all these cats. In terms of what's happening today, how do you feel about the way music has evolved in terms of, like, I mean, those were really close to the source. You were at the beginning of rock and roll, and now everything's much different. Do you have a lot of respect for today's music?
You know, I wouldn't have had it if it wasn't for iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be Tuesday, but they're falling behind now. So,
okay.
So it comes out like Wednesday or Thursday.
Uh-huh.
They put all the new releases up, you know, for mm-hmm. download. And I go through those with the exception of hip-hop, country music, Latin music, and classical. I listen to everything that's there. And you get like a little 30-second thing of each cut.
Okay.
And I hear new bands, because they put a lot of indie stuff on there, too.
Uh-huh.
I hear new bands that are incredible
uh-huh.
and stuff that I really love. And I download it and I have it. And and then I realize I don't have to buy CDs anymore.
Yeah.
And not only that, but most albums by anybody, the listener is not going to like every track on it.
Sure.
So you get that 30-second thing and you get... And you listen and you say, well, I like maybe between 3 and 7 songs on here, on this album. So you get this album that you want with exactly the tracks you want on it for between $3 and $7.
Yeah.
Why am I buying CDs?
Right.
Good question.
I just got an iPod. Right. You're making me ask the same question because I haven't bought from iTunes yet, but now I'm getting ready to.
It's a great thing.
Yeah.
Al Cooper, you are, and I'm not sure how many people in our listening audience know this, but you're one of the most sampled artists in the history of recorded music. You know, hip-hop artists seem to love your stuff.
How do you know this?
Well, we got Jay-Z. We got a clip of Jay-Z right here, Chris, don't we?
Yeah.
You're my best friend's sister, grown woman and all. See, I am around girls, I ruin them all. Plus your mom called me son, around you since I was small. Should I watch you mature?
Nah, okay, so that was a sample of your song.
Yeah. I listen to hip-hop, you know, and I also read, from the time I was a kid, I always read everything there was on an album. So I always look to see who's sampling what from whom.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep seeing stuff from various incarnations of your work.
Could you make a list so I could give it to my lawyer?
You're not getting paid? You got to be getting paid.
Well, Jay-Z paid me.
Yeah?
Well... Almost.
Oh.
Which song did he sample there?
That's you know, it's really funny because that's like one of the whitest songs I ever wrote. I'm serious.
Yeah.
It's from a movie.
Okay.
Hal Ashby's first film called The Landlord.
The Landlord, yeah.
And it's called the love theme from The Landlord. The other thing that's humorous is that the publishing company that owns my catalog,
mm-hmm.
they don't tell me when these things happen.
So how do you find out?
Fans write me emails and tell me.
Oh.
Oh, otherwise, I have no idea.
They say, dude, you're owed some more money.
No, no, no. Like some guy said, who's that singing on your sample that Jay-Z used? And I'm going, Jay-Z used? I said, what song is that? He said, a love theme. And I went, no, you mixed me up with Barry White.
Right. No.
He said, the song is called Soon You Understand. And I'm going, wait, that's part of a lyric I wrote. I go, oh, love theme from The Landlord. Okay, so I went out and bought it so I could hear it because, you know, the record company didn't send it to me.
Yeah.
You know, because that would cost some money. And so, you know, like, that's what's going on. So once I went to the movies, like when I lived in Nashville on a, you know, Wednesday afternoon, see the new Robert Redford movie, Sneakers.
Yeah.
Then I sit down, the movie starts, and I'm going, what is that music? I know that music. That's me.
I made that music.
I said, that's me. I said, that's like an Al Cooper thing. So I went, you know, I went home from the movies and I called them up and I said, what kind of deal did you cut with them? And they said, oh, okay, ka-ching.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, here's your money. We forgot to tell you, Al.
You mean you're getting all this on the back end?
No, well, I mean, they don't, well, you always get it on the back end.
But I mean, your publishers and stuff don't tell.
They don't tell me. No.
That's incredible.
Not a thing.
You know those iTunes samples, those things that you listen to. Maybe you should start including hip hop too.
Oh, okay.
You might find some more of your stuff.
So we're talking to Al Cooper. His new album, Black Coffee, available now. Al will be at BB King's on Wednesday, July 13th. You can go to www.bbkingblues.com to find out the information. Also, alcooper.com if you want all the information on Al, because there's a book there. Someone actually wrote me asking about a book you had written that's out of print. Is there any way that they can get hold of that again?
Yes, if they have $100 and want to go to eBay.
So there you go. If you want the Al Cooper book, it's available for $100 at eBay. Are you selling it there?
Not me. Not me.
Well, Al, it's been great talking to you. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for coming
by. And have a great gig, and I hope the album does well. And thanks for stopping by.
And calm down, guys.
Okay. We're going to go into the Al Cooper energy for the rest of
the show. Yeah.
It's Morning's Edition. It's 45 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it, eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Past the hour with Lamb, this thing. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. Obviously, it's Air America Radio. What was Al Cooper saying as he was walking out? He wanted you to listen to Kenny Hathaway?
Donny Hathaway. Yeah, the late Donny Hathaway.
All right.
Yeah. Well, because he did a song called I Love You More Than You'll Ever Know, which I remember from the original Blood, Sweat, and Tears album, Child is the Father to the Man, which was the one album that he was on.
Yeah.
That Al Cooper was on.
Right. Okay. So there, Donny Hathaway. Now I got to go listen to it. I want to learn too, damn it.
Well, he was just an incredible, incredible vocalist.
I don't know him, and I feel
really
stupid. I probably do if I heard him.
You ever hear The Ghetto? He did a live.
Yeah,
that's Donny Hathaway.
Okay, all right, sorry. Okay, sure, Donny Hathaway, I know him. I do. So let's get into the story. I've never seen anyone get more worked up. Brendan McDonald, our producer, Brendan P.W. McDonald, has these strange outbursts of emotion over strange things. And we're sitting here talking about this story that U.S. workers say that they squander. U.S. workers say they squander over 2 hours a day at the workplace.
Yeah.
You know, just sort of surfing the web, hanging out, flirting with coworkers, doing this or that. I've known this to be true about people I know who work in cubicles and offices. I don't know that life myself because I never lived it. But, you know, it's par for the course, right? And
I guess.
But yeah, well, it is. Because Brendan just explodes. He's like, that's because, well, let's bring him in here.
We don't get no vacation here in the U.S.
Like, you guys, like, Chris, you, like, literally waste time right here in front of me. But you do your job. You somehow manage to waste time and work at the same time. You're surfing. You've got things going. You're traveling.
Oh, yeah.
But you're working the knobs. What's up, Brendan?
That's totally justified.
Okay.
Two hours.
Here we go.
It's 2 hours a week, right?
Yeah.
Is that what the average is?
Yeah.
That I believe
that's 2 hours a day, dude.
Oh, a day?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, no, but listen though, that is indicative of the amount of money comparable to the amount of work people are doing here in this country get paid, which is not comparable compared to what the profit margins of their companies are. So that's BS right there. And then the fact that, you know, we work more hours a year than any other country. I mean, everyone out there I know is screaming about maquiladoras and other sweatshops and that right now,
right,
which I completely understand. But I'm talking about Western industrialized nations and you know, middle class, yeah, to upper class jobs. They are, you know, office jobs in this country are treated at a much more disposable rate by employers than in other countries.
You're going to give them ideas, Brendan. Now they're going to say, all right, fine, take the 2 hours, but it's coming out of your vacation time.
No, yeah, just give us more vacation.
There you go. That's, you know what's interesting about this story is that people in their 50s, 55, that they only waste 30 minutes a day, and it's not wasted, that they're more efficient. That was the most interesting thing about this story, is that people who are older work harder, they're more focused. And you know what? Those are the people that have the hardest time getting a job if they're out of work or they need to come out of retirement or they're looking for jobs. The older people are sort of like, like Al Cooper was saying. He couldn't get a record deal, and these are the people that are the most efficient workers.
Well, First of all, the older people wasted their 2 hours a day when they were young, and they also want to get paid more.
See, I don't know if they wasted their time because...
Oh, trust me, I'm close to that age, and I know I did waste it.
We're at the post office?
Yeah! Oh, yeah. I can tell you stories. I was the worst worker in the history of the United States Post Office.
Riley, didn't you get, like, called absent from within the post office? Like,
I would go into work and then call in sick from work.
I'll tell you, to be the worst... To be the worst employee at a post office, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
He's worse than the guy that shot the other three coworkers.
Yep. But I've been to the post office, and I have no idea. Sometimes you're standing online, and you're just going, you got to be kidding me. You got to be. You're just going to talk to that person? They will talk to people for an hour. It's like, oh, is this a new address? It is in the old place I lived. Like, you got to be kidding me.
Well, that's the public face of the post office. No one sees the private face of the post office.
Yeah, apparently what you're saying operates at an even slower pace.
Slower pace? You should see the side. They have these things called swing rooms where people go in. That's where they lounge, okay?
Okay.
And I went, because I had a little business to transact at work one day that had nothing to do with work.
Oh, boy.
I go with it. I saw the woman pick up the phone. Yeah. And I said, my number. I gave my name, and I said, I won't be in today. Yeah. What are you going to do? I was young.
Yeah, those are the good old days,
yeah,
man.
Now I'm more productive.
Well,
yeah,
I also think the blame on this story, it goes a lot to middle management, because you have those jobs. Anyone who's seen the movie Office Space knows, and that's a pretty accurate representation.
It was on last night.
Where the guy says, I have 15 bosses, yeah, and they all tell me to do different things.
At this place, I have 15 bosses. Right. I don't know who's my boss.
Dude, I'm meeting with two bosses this afternoon.
Uh-oh.
And they're bringing in a boss from out of town to talk to us at 10:30.
That's not a joke.
I know. This is like my first experience with this, and you don't know who to yell at. You know, because you yell at somebody.
You waste 2 hours a day just getting angry.
Yeah, because it just gets absorbed by three or four people. They spread apart your yelling, and it's not even effective anymore.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I got to say that there's some jobs, because you know, you look in a city as large as this, and people do a lot of really hard backbreaking work where they don't really have time to slough off.
Yeah. Well, I can understand that. Sometimes that's more engaging. Sometimes you'd rather be like sitting there doing the hard work as opposed to going, when is this going to end? Just watching your life trickle away, because a lot of those people, they don't have work to do and they got to pretend like they're working.
Yeah.
Clearly, I think what this study is talking about is white collar jobs.
Yes.
And as far as we go in terms of that, I totally agree with it and think it's justified. Take those 2 hours. Chill out. Play some Tetris.
Yeah. Download some stuff. Order some CDs.
Internet solitaire. I've seen a lot of that.
Well, look, for those of you who are just tuning in here at the Morning Sedition this morning, here's some highlights from what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. The United Nations says Japan is a powder keg of racism. Ethnic Koreans complain that when they shop in a Japanese store, the owners always watch them like they're going to steal something. At last count, there are already 100 Japanese branches of the Krew Crush Crayon.
Oh, that'll pretty much do it for us.
Morristown, New Jersey has been named the best town in America by Money Magazine. Some of the towns that didn't win were Bainbridge Island, Washington, Naperville, Illinois, Toxic Landing, Tennessee, and Arion Falls, Idaho.
U.S. workers, as we were talking about, say they waste 2 hours a day. On the upside, at this point, each worker in America has had time to Google everybody they had a crush on in junior high. The 2 hours a day cited in the study represents an average of all U.S. workers, though on Morning's Edition, our producer says Mark and I waste three.
Yes.
And we're at the end of that three now. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. What is Bush going to do now that Rove's been revealed? What he always does? Nothing. Rove knows things about George W. Bush that George Sr. doesn't even know. Wake up, sheeple. Rove knows where all the bodies are buried. He can't be incarcerated or stopped or even slowed down. He's pure evil in size 46 pants.
Ooh.
That's the Quiff Notes for today.
Fast day, Marin.
Yeah, I know, dude. I'm winded. What do we got tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow we've got the documentary filmmaker behind The Oil Factory. You mentioned him earlier today. Gerard Ungerman will be with us tomorrow. And Mark Milfington will update us on the war on brains.
Good show, man.
Good show, man. See you tomorrow. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.